Well, chaos always prevails. And strangely, there is, you could say, a zone or a temperament, a discovery, depending on how fluffed up you want to make it, right? There is a temperament or a zone where chaos is non-afflicting. You know, without saying fancy things about the meme of self-realization. And all kinds of fancy things, of course, are said about it, right, across so many cultures and so many celebrities. If not, you know, the purveyors of the world's major religions, right, included in that mythos. And then you get into a whole bunch of shit, right, once you take it to that level. Why would the simplest revelation of the nature of being turn into the Crusades? How the fuck did that happen? Excuse me. Wait, the guy was just chilling out saying, God rocks. God really rocks. And I'm just here to share that with you and, you know, in a, right, simple manner. And then all of a sudden there's horses and spears and chariots and bodies everywhere. And you're like, please. Did I miss something? What happened? Yeah, and we're contemporary humans, which is, you know, why not pat ourselves on the shoulder? It just means we're alive today. So one would think as contemporary humans, we would be more adroit at managing our affairs so that the unbridled chaos of the Crusades wouldn't continue in the present age. And yet it hasn't abated in the least, has it? It hasn't abated in the least. And the gift that we've been given by Jesus and Buddha and Amici and Muhammad and, you know, everyone else you could possibly think of. This is the fruit of their effort, of their realization.
It's a whisper down the lane, isn't it? You know, I mean, in history. So, you know, now we're left with all these, you know, these books that say this and that, and it's all pretty convoluted and all over the place.
It's all over the place. Yeah. And, you know, in comes, you know, something like the Course in Miracles or...
Yeah, that was supposed to straighten things out.
These other self-celebrating, visionary, channeled works that were supposed to, you know, help everyone put down their whips and spears and thermonuclear devices and whale-killing sonar and everything else you can think of. And it's like, we must have missed the memo.
Again.
It's curious. Mm-hmm. So in the midst of all of this, the spiritual marketplace, you could say, you know, legitimate teachings, entertainments of a kind, and the ongoing chaos of the Crusades. Nothing's really changed much. And perhaps by virtue of a giant explosion in population and the pressure on the biosphere and the food chain as the consequence of that population, we could say things are heading down a sorrowful path as fast as you could say, I'm fucked. But that's okay, you know.
Got to go somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the whole veneer of the biologic technological proliferation is relatively thin. I mean, what's the tallest creature that you know? The tallest terrestrial creature is probably the giraffe, right? Just how high off the ground does the giraffe stand? Not that tall, really.
14 feet.
Yeah, maybe twice the biggest human.
Yeah.
Big male.
So even the tallest living creature is, well, mammal, is 20 feet. And the sequoias and the redwoods, right, are...
350.
Yeah, right. So the tallest living organism that's terrestrially bound is a redwood.
Yeah.
Yeah. The big redwoods, and they are deliciously huge.
It's like, oh my God, oh my God.
It's dizzying because you can't see the top.
You can't.
You can't see the top. Yeah, you can't do it. You just can't do it.
You can't get back far.
Yeah, you can't get back far enough to see the top.
And it appears like nothing's there because everything lives up on the treetops, so it's like quiet and
yeah.
You see like a squirrel every once in a while.
Yeah, the canopy is huge. Yeah, that's fun. So the tallest living thing at, let's say, 350 feet is still fairly close to home, right? And if you're looking at the veneer of the biosphere of Earth, you know, even though we're incredibly important, you know, and our lives are incredibly important, we're not all that noticeable. We're not all that different from the common cold, as in the size of the virus that contributes to the rhino. Yeah, we're not that much bigger than the virus called the common cold. And yet, right, we dwell in a profundity of consternation and call it violation, psychologically, psychiatrically, emotionally, behaviorally. All of our institutions are overcome by the indignity that we foist upon ourselves. And the Crusades march on.
It's almost like we're still, you know, the animal kingdom. We're just not even a step above the animal kingdom because when you look at it,
yep.
We're still just killing, you know, we're predators.
I would say the animal kingdom has a lot more dignity than we do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like lions have a factory farm that spits out gazelle.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But look what we do to pigs and chickens and cows and everything.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, you don't want to get into those videos, right?
Right.
Because then you really have no choice but to become an ethical vegan, as in, like, right now. So it's like, no, I don't show me the factory farm videos. I can't handle it because I have to go out for chicken and broccoli this afternoon. I am the Crusades.
There was another point of view in America.
Yeah.
I bumped into a book on Red Cloud.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've ever heard of Red Cloud. He's the only Indian to make the United States surrender.
Oh.
He beat the Americans.
That's exciting.
The United States.
In some battle somewhere or something?
Yeah, up on the Bozeman Trail.
Bozeman Trail.
He gathered all the Indians together, and he was a Sioux. And what I think is interesting is that in a different perspective in this conversation.
Yeah.
They were savages, right?
Who's that? The Sioux?
The Indians. Yeah, especially the Sioux.
They were savages.
Yeah, they were savages because when they killed somebody, they mutilated the hell out of them. But they didn't kill them right away. They cut parts off.
I see.
So you could have the experience of really being torn apart and suffering.
Whoa.
Now, that was done consistently. It made ISIS look like kindergartners.
I see. Yeah.
Poked eyes out, cut ears and nose off,
yeah.
Chopped fingers off, cut genitals, stuffed them in the mouth.
Wow.
The most violent.
Yes.
Can we do this to Frank?
And it was purposeful.
Yeah, of course.
No, you know what the purpose was?
What?
They absolutely were convinced that when you died,
mm.
the moment of death, the right. condition that you died in,
yeah.
would be what you showed up in the next life with.
Oh, so they wanted to mutilate you so that you would have suffering.
The worst fucking reincarnation in the next life.
Seemed like it worked.
I mean,
who knew this must have been what happened to me.
Yeah, that's us. We are the reincarnated cavalry. The reincarnated mutilated cavalry.
It's just so amazing. They really were, and they did it with joy.
Well, sure.
They loved doing it.
Of course.
And it was looked at as the most egregious insult that you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
Well, I would imagine so.
Well, waterboarding must be a real hoot compared to that.
That is. Yeah. And then they taught the American soldiers how to do it. So mm-hmm. they followed after them.
Yeah.
So that was infectious.
Yes. So in the midst of, you know, these curious views, you know, it's like aiming for something as white collar as liberation.
That's heard.
It's like, how could we, why even dare? I mean, it's like I'm even embarrassed to, you know, like even consider it. And yet the yoga studios are full and the retreats are full and, you know, everyone wants to go to the next Bhakti Fest or Chant Fest or Karma Fest or fucking Fest, whatever it is. And we're just insatiable.
Well, enjoyment.
Yeah.
You know, do it for enjoyment.
Yeah.
Entertainment.
Yeah. And then we have...
time somehow.
Then we have the unmitigated gall to, like, want to be realized, too. Kind of turns it around a little bit, you know? You're like, you got to be kidding.
I mean, you couldn't make up this story.
No. So it's fun. I think it's fun just to, you know, blaspheme away. To kind of, you know, let's say take a fresh look at what one's relationship is with whatever reality is, because we don't know what it is, but like, what's your relationship with your life, right? With your own mind? How much joy peaks in during the day, if any? Are you even on the lookout for it, or too ashamed of yourself to even be eligible? You know what I mean? It's really weird how we present ourselves inwardly, or, you know, in relationship and to different groups, right? Like, you know, you walk into a Better Business Bureau meeting, you know, you're going to present one way, and you go to the bowling alley and you're going to present another way. And if you go get a, you know, a gin and tonic, you're going to present another way. So, right? I mean, here's this really kind of malleable, chameleon-like persona, like just trying to, you know, get my fair share and not catch a tomahawk.
Or Ebola.
Or lose any body parts.
Yeah. Or lose any body parts. And you know, yeah. What the fuck are we doing? You know, day in and day out, our financial relations, our entertainment relationships, what do we have on the TiVo? Do we even care? You know, what do we do with the vitality, the strange vitality of our lives? What adventure do we commit ourselves to? Is that improving your bowling handicap, or learning how to play the sarangi, or, you know, going to rock concerts and getting fucked up in the parking lot, you know, dancing to Grateful Dead? I mean, I'm down with all that. And if there is such a thing as the hoity-toity, you know, self-realization, whether it's promulgated by Peter Brown or by Paul Hederman or, you know, favorite gurus alive and dead, what the fuck? It's kind of really like an entertainment process.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, I mean, I'm a shameless card-carrying seeker with nothing to show. And And, you know, I've gone to more programs than many, you know, gurus and programs and, you know, contemplative.
Sat at the feet of.
I've sat at the feet of, shined the shoes of, you know, taken the hit, right? Yeah. I'm like, I mean, I was kind of like a compulsive entertainment vector for me, thinking that, oh yeah, I really hate myself more than I can imagine, and maybe enlightenment is a way out. It's a way out of me, right? It's a way out of confusion and codependency and vulnerability and addictions of all kinds and this, you know, horrible arrogance that I'm entitled, that I suffer from. Yeah, all that. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. And maybe you mature just a little bit by the time you're a grandparent.
Yeah. It gets pretty desperate. Because you have all the accoutrements.
Yeah.
The accumulation of grandkids, family, and it's still...
Yeah.
I may be nothing more than a word.
Yeah.
Grandpa. They're not interested in me.
Yeah.
They don't give a fuck.
No.
No, really.
No. I mean...
It's nothing.
It's rare that we're interested in the profound vitality of another human being.
Hmm.
I mean, we're wired to be, you know, narcissistically introverted. Even if we're extroverted, we're still performing for the sake of attention,
mm-hmm.
right? Adulation and adoration. Like, you know, playing a song at the end of a satsang talk and... Right, being a performer, right, a chant artist. Blow me.
Could we be the victims of really bad parenting?
Well, of course we are. That goes without saying. Yeah. But then again, it's like, show me like really good parenting, and then we'll condemn them. Yeah. Yeah, right. The confusion of what we refer to as human behavioral agenda, right? The human cultural mean is like fucked, totally fucked. And so this, the social experiment, all the institutions that humans participate in, you could say either for the sustenance of our kumbaya or in the aggrandizement of the accumulation of wealth and influence and power, right? At the expense of other. Which is also, you know, quite clear. And this is the best we can do. I mean, if you could get to this wonder planet loaded with these godforsaken bacteria, you'd probably say, well, the place is beautiful, but the inhabitants, fuck, we're not staying here. No. I mean, you know.
The whole thing about only using, like, a portion of our brain, though.
Yeah.
Were we given this huge brain fork? We're only, what is it? It's less than 10% now, yeah. Right? Doesn't it keep
That's
dropping?
That's not a distraction. Nobody can say that.
Did you see Lucy, the film Lucy?
No.
It's fun, because it plays around with the 10% thing.
And she's... uses, what, 90% or something?
Well, actually, she goes full boat. Okay. But you can't say what that looks like, because it's weird. But she is inadvertently inoculated by a super drug that was designed to create a whole new wave of addiction and therefore cash. And one of the unintended, you could say, or surprising byproducts of the drug and the dose that she received it is that she starts amping up. And so the film is it's kind of like a chase, really. You know, like a good car chase. The film is ultimately a good car chase to see whether she makes it, whether she goes fully lucid or not, because she's up against all kinds of obstacles. Yeah, it was remarkable. I mean, it's such delicious enlightenment poetry. Right?
It was great fun. Great.
Really nice enlightenment poetry. The critics didn't do a very good job of it. Because most of the critics that wrote about it were, you know, muggles. And so they wrote about it by virtue of criticizing it as an action film with, you know, what's your name, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, no, you missed the fact that this was an inoculation by the divine into the human cultural meme to see what might be possible as a as poetry for awakening. Mm-hmm. And the whole 10% of the brain versus 90% was just a vehicle to try to make that idea palatable. Mm-hmm. I think it wasn't key to it. Yeah. Yeah.
It just makes you wonder, though, if that would change our, you know, I don't know if it would, but if it would change our
I don't
experience or
see it.
Existence.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a there's plenty of smart people around. I mean, you know, when I worked at Merck, there were these brainiacs walking the hallways, and they were as dumb shit as anybody. Well, I mean, they were smart. But they could not
that's
make
not
better
the,
decisions.
Right, that's
kind
not the barometer.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear you, right? Mm-hmm. The brainiac is not the barometer of what we're referring to. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I
something
feeling
or something.
We used to use more of it in the past.
Could be.
Yeah.
And
could
now
be.
We don't use
it. I mean,
there's
that thing about, you know, healers and, you know, I don't think many doctors are healers anymore.
No.
The experience that I have with them, they're not even looking at you, you know, or very little even touching. And I think that there may have been a portion of the brain that we used back then that we, you know, they say ESP comes from another part. And you're right, we could have used more of our brain earlier on.
Yes.
And we've shut a lot of it off, you know, because of...
Yeah, the physician is a point-of-sale conduit for pharmaceutical companies. That's all. It's just a point-of-sale sales agent.
They're good technicians, you know. That's always a good thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, surgical disciplines versus you know, diagnostic disciplines.
And they're just afraid now. I mean, it's just... they're just
everyone's
afraid.
In a panic, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
You know anything about remote viewing?
Sure, yeah.
What do you know about it?
Well, like I'm seeing you from here.
It works.
And it
talking
works.
About the Army programs.
No, the notion,
yeah, I'm aware of it.
Little I know about it.
Yeah.
The notion, there is a, you can actually cultivate the ability to remote view.
Right.
By tuning into successive trainings with a particular kind of language.
Mm.
And then you have to identify an object, place, and time.
Yeah.
And somehow or another you can get back to it. But underlying it is the notion that what is called the subconscious and the conscious are part of one field.
Yes.
And we cannot get to the subconscious except through using the conscious to train the ability to do it.
Right.
There's no overriding theory why the fuck this works.
Sure.
But the Army used it.
Yeah.
To find some things, and then they dropped, they've got the hell away.
George Clooney played that part in that movie. Do you ever see that?
Goats.
The goats, you know, making, you know, goats.
Men who stare at goats.
Men who stare at goats.
Thank you. Where's Suzanne when you need her? Well,
hey.
We have Francine.
Hey, that's
I'm like not here. It's like, oh.
Anyway, it's an appealing
stay
that,
with it. Yeah.
That person.
Really.
And that all we're in is a field of consciousness.
Okay.
And that the past is equally as accessible
right.
as the future.
Okay. Yeah.
There's no distinction between it.
Right.
We're just locked in.
Yeah.
The one aspect of the consciousness field.
Right.
Which is the one we're using to notice ourselves.
Nice. Sure.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how accurate they are, but they
why did the Army drop it? Because it worked and they were frightened?
They were frightened. And
well,
it was
not
too big to control.
Well, the rumor is they've gone underground.
Really
they didn't drop it.
Right.
It undermined their impulsive need to arm and kill.
Oh, sure. Yeah, well, that's right. If you're tapping into a field like that, then the unintended consequence would be absolute nonviolence.
Yeah. At a certain point, because you can see the consequences where you need to blow everybody up.
Yeah. Well, that...
then you have to stop it.
You could say that's... maybe that's an idealized tag-along for this silly notion of self-realization.
Yeah.
that not that we're even interested in nonviolence, we're more or less interested in ameliorating the imagination of suffering, right? That's more of a motivating factor, typically, than the altruistic interest in the cessation of violence. Even though in all the religions, right, whether it's on the tablets or in the Vinaya or wherever, you'll find reinforcement, right, for nonviolence, you know, except maybe with misunderstandings of the Quran, which appear to be, which can be interpreted as encouraged gratuitous, encouraged gratuitous violence. But that's just the way maybe that the Judeo-Christian world, right, lambasts the Muslim world to get a leg up on the oil.
Yes. Also, probably can hear a lot of interpretations over the years, right?
Yeah, yeah, and the way
about those books.
Well, right. Certainly, you know, a certain segment of Muslims that buy into the violence promoting aspects.
Hey, listen! Every time we go grocery shopping, pay our utility bill, or fill up the SUV, we're doing the same. You know, nobody in the Western world is off the grid of violence.
It's a different type of violence.
It's societal, institutionalized kind of violence, the violence of the West.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it's
violence
even
of ignorance.
Perhaps it's even more egregious than, you know, the
it's
violence
more sophisticated.
Of a, yeah,
an undercover.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You don't make blood in your hands.
Right.
Sophisticated.
It's not wrong.
So I don't, it's fun once in a while to look at, if you have a motive, you know, let's say for being here, participating in a certain kind of conversation, a certain kind of discovery. And I'm not holding you to it, I'm not holding myself to it, but, you know, what's the nature of the motive, right? What drives one's interest? Is it universal altruism? The suspension of suffering, right? The I want it all kind of relationship with consciousness itself.
Isn't it just, you know, I I've had glimpses of something better, and I just want that something better. I want a better frame of mind. I want a better worldview.
Yeah.
I want to not be miserable in my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I want to
fair enough
feel open and...
Yeah, that's honest, right? It's local. It's peculiar or particular to you, right? Your life experience and how you might participate in something or cultivate some ideas or practices maybe so that you can fulfill an instinct for freedom from affliction.
Where you can embrace the affliction.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that's what my boss told me to do, and I told him I felt like blowing up our new scheduling system.
Yeah, I hear you.
Like,
embrace
it
the
sucks.
Affliction.
I feel like blowing it up. And he said, we need to embrace it.
Thank you.
And get back to work.
I thought you had
also
embrace your feeling of blowing it up. That's what I
thought. You need to embrace this. So,
yeah.
Like, okay. So what are you saying here?
Right.
Embrace it. I hate it.
Yeah.
I embrace it.
That,
you know, I think it's just, you know, it's just the metaphor for everything in life that, you know, you're not always going to feel, you know, what you've glimpsed as being perfect. It's just, you know, you've got these hills and valleys and waves and things that go on. So is it okay to embrace the parts that suck? I don't know. Might as well.
Might as well. I mean, it's your life. It's your experiment. Right? Why limit yourself to only dealing with everything in one way or the same way when you can, what it looks like, you can appear in an elastic manner with everything that's appearing.
Right?
I mean, realization, you could say if it's real, if it's true, if it actually lends to being unencumbered or less afflicted, can contribute to a certain kind of elasticity of being, not just psychologically or emotionally or physically, but at the entirety of being, might have some more humor, be more flexible, more elastic.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? Even, you know, even that, of course, turns out to be a palliative, right? Within the context of the human cultural meme.
Yeah, it's like traveling lighter.
Like, yeah, it's like fucking traveling lighter. It's like, fuck that.
And then you'll be, like, nice to people on planes and shit.
Yeah.
It's so paradoxical.
That sounds awful.
Isn't it? Nice to people on planes?
What did you just say?
What a horrible spiritual path.
I know.
Some of this is coming from a head of an experience.
Sounds terrible.
I think Peter used a plane example, too.
Yeah.
Seems to be a popular thing. People get pissed off on planes.
people put forth their perspective. You know, we hear from Peter and Paul. And now Mary's going to speak something like that. But
Matthew and Luke.
Yeah. That's right. But, there's seemingly an approach or a trick or a perspective. You know, it's... Let's say it's the identification, you know. But, you know, there is this identification with your thoughts. So if you can pull back from that, you know, and you see that you are not your thoughts, you know, okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Or there's not working for you.
Or, well, that's the thing.
I'm asking. I don't know because I'm not sure.
Or whatever else, you know, just see that this is... our worldview is not it, you know, it's the actuality, that's it, you know. So, live the actuality, I guess, you know, but, you know, what does that really mean?
Nothing.
When you're hearing it from somebody else, it's like, well, that sounds good, it sure seems like it's working for you, you know.
Yeah, I know.
It's like telling someone that smokes cigarettes they should quit.
I think that that's a great observation of, you know, all the ways that humans come together to speak with each other or to speak or listen to a celebrity at the front of the room, right? As if that celebrity has accomplished a way of living that makes your way of living look shitty.
Yeah.
That's real hard to do on my end.
It's like,
right?
Not happening.
Yeah.
It's totally paradoxical.
It is.
And I can't reconcile it, no matter how I try. And there's absolutely no answers.
Yeah.
And so,
right.
In the face of every moment is absolutely unique, disappears, and never appear again.
Yeah.
What the fuck can you do about that? Nothing.
Yeah.
You can just, whatever shows up, well, I deal with it.
Yeah.
And if you want to invent a neurotic interpretation,
knock yourself
which
off.
You use your brain to do, you can even release some hormones and chemicals.
Yes, yes.
And really have an upsetting experience. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
God bless you.
I think you got it the other way.
Yeah. That's right. You can convince yourself that taking the next drink or the next OTB, you know, bet is the thing you need to do to cope with just how miserable we are.
You're just spilling wax.
So? You need to spill the wax.
I've given up trying to figure it out. Just be live.
You should be as happy as Jamie, who just likes to play with candy.
Fire.
Don't spill the wax.
I like fire. It's fun to find some like souls.
I hope we're not that. We're nuts.
I've gotten that feedback.
Well, it's kind of delightful and slippery.
Mm-hmm.
The capacity to mistake what this is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
And the gift of mistaking what this is comes with, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anyone's capacity to misunderstand the self-transcendent bananitudes of present experience does so with the help of consciousness itself. Mm-hmm. You're not, right? If I'm ignorant as a gift of consciousness. If I'm somehow beginning to dismiss ignorance, let's put it that way, it's a gift of consciousness, right? If I'm inviting people to another landmark event,
right,
because I'm just a money-hungry poser from hell, it's the gift of consciousness. If someone bails out of that program and says, fuck you, you losers, it's a gift right. of consciousness, right?
Right?
So from moment to moment.
It's all possible.
Yeah.
Possibilities.
It's just like, this is what's on its mind. Now this is what's on its mind. And
what's revealed is the reaction to the moment to moment.
Yeah.
That where a particular occurrence becomes lodged as something's off that needs fixing.
Yes.
That's another moment of consciousness.
It's all.
But it's not generating, that's not right either.
No, that shit pops out of nowhere. I had no idea. I'm like, I thought I was going to be like, this shit. What happened?
This is an IMAX climax.
It's good. From the big screen.
From moment to moment. Here you are. This is a three-dimensional, highly pixelated, right? This is pretty high res, right? Pretty high res. IMAX climax. And you're kind of an improvisational walk-on. Because if you try as you might, you won't find the screenplay. You won't know what to say next.
Yeah, but, you know, just to try to be awake during it all, that in itself is a bit of a challenge.
Most of us are so asleep.
You can't do the two things simultaneously.
Two things being?
Falling into the trap of what consciousness is presenting for you to deal with, and then being up and apart from it and noticing it.
I don't know. Sure, it can do anything at once.
That makes perfect sense, but so does the opposite of that.
Yeah. Part of seeing how seductive this is, that's very poignant. It's like, see how
it's worth a shot.
How insanely seductive this is. Like, with all your might, it's like, I got nothing on this. It's like insane.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you are fucked into submission from moment to moment. If we fight with that, then you could say that's samsaric. If we resist how unruly this is, because I have a personal or private agenda, then, you know, you're going to hit the wall. Maybe at 35 MPH, maybe at, 650 MPH. I don't know. You're going to hit the wall.
It's like when my kids ask for advice now.
What are you asking me for?
Call me up.
Call Grandpa.
How should I work? What's happening? What do you think is going on?
I don't know.
Like a snack?
Come over to this night sky sangha meeting. We figure it out there. We really get to the bottom of it there. Everyone walks out a lot more confident. Yeah, right.
It is fun to be present, though.
It is. Yes, it is.
I've noticed when I decide to be, and that's not a lot, because
understood.
Most of the time, you're just in the grind of being at work, and you're doing.
You're as good a sleepwalker as anybody.
Yeah.
Just doing your doing.
And then there's moments where you're like, oh, wow, look at this.
Well, yeah, that's right.
And it's nice.
And that, you could say, as beautifully and simply put as that is, that's also a profound, if not poignant, motivator to, right? Mm-hmm. Pick up the crumb, follow the crumbs back, if there were a back, to a living articulation of wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's about what you got.
Yeah.
It's all you'd get.
Really, all you get is the miracle of being. Oh, I feel so shortchanged.
That's all.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that was.
God damn it! It's just the miracle of being. Yeah. Oh, I knew it. Why did I come to this planet? I was looking for some good shit.
Well, at least some of the levers and knobs to try to cause something.
Mm.
That would be fun.
Good luck, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, yeah, well, you know, push on the knobs, pull on the levers, do.
I haven't given up on that.
No, why would you?
No.
Yeah. No.
I mean, getting back to the whole brain thing, I think there's a lot more to us, you know, and I just watched Practical Magic about witchcraft.
That can be exciting.
And, you know,
yeah, yeah.
I'm still half there. Like, there's very real possibility that we can control and, you know,
well,
matter.
Come
and,
over
know,
to my house.
How much
some witchcraft?
How much?
Drinks and herbs.
Well, I mean, how? Okay. You don't have to answer the question, but do you make room in your life to participate in the cultivation of, you know, shamanic endeavor? I can hear that you're friendly to it, you know, philosophically for sure. And then, how does that, you know, does
no,
that?
I don't.
You don't.
I would say I don't.
It's curious, right? It's just curious. But I mean, not to, you know, focus on you. I mean, we're all like that. We have
yeah.
a thousand wonders and implications
well,
and possibilities.
There's no clear path or anything.
Right?
Yeah.
And yet we don't really, you know, apply ourselves
no,
to much of any of it.
I really don't apply myself.
Yeah.
I mean, my friend does Reiki.
Cool.
And she said, you know, you should try this. You should, you know, be a healer.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had any, you know, beyond children and taking care.
That's
I know
big. That's
that.
Big, yeah.
But, you know, it's not something that I feel has come through me.
Yeah.
It would be something that I would pursue, but it's not.
Yeah.
I always follow things that, you know, you have.
I used to do it.
Did you? Reiki?
Well, a whole host of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to do it. I mean, I guess I still can. Like, I like to teach it. That's fun, you know, to bring people into a somatic thing.
You never went to the cranial sacral, did you?
But I'm not that fond of, you know, working on people. I like to work with this way, you know, rather than in the context of a healer, you know.
Hmm? You seem to have such a sensitivity when you do that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, you could say partly organically and partly spending a lot of money to get a lot of training to right, improve and cultivate that sensitivity. Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm talking about that and I'm talking about, you know, just our relationship with matter.
Mm-hmm.
And now we don't really even try to control it, you know,
mm-hmm.
because we don't have I don't know. It's I guess when you consciously try to do it, maybe you can't, or you know, it's got to come from some other
yeah.
place. Or
well, how well do you listen to yourself? Not well. You're not that good, and you're not alone. Even obeying your own instincts or mm-hmm. intuitions, mm-hmm. or even the decisions that you think that you're making for the betterment of your experience. I mean, I'm a total failure when it comes to paying any attention at all to what I think I should do next, which will enhance my experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just a total goober. But I think we all are. We might like to think that I'm playing tennis and my investments are working and, you know, the deal I've got at the shore and da-da-da-da-da, you know. Many men behave this way, right? You know, it's characterized in the movies. And, mm-hmm. of course, as many women are also now being, you know, let's say invited and encouraged to behave that same way, mm-hmm. right? In whatever one's affairs are. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is just
the
a myth.
Feminine movement
myth
is,
of hubris.
Let's behave like men.
Yeah, the feminine movement is let's behave like men. Isn't it fucked?
We
yeah.
deserve to behave like men.
Mm-hmm.
That's so fucked.
No,
oh,
so fucked.
I know, let's all act like
be
asshole
a,
men.
Yeah.
Be a multitasker.
Call it a feminist
a
movement.
Their own game.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Right. I mean, it's like the sacred feminine, whatever that, you know, may be or once was or is today, it's been kind of co-opted by women wearing pants and behaving like men.
Mm.
you're like, wow, what a way to kill that sacred part of our culture. You know, how strange that, because all of these societies, at least most of them that are so-called industrialized or even primitive, are misogynist, you know, to a tragic degree. Mm-hmm. I mean, the witch burning, right?
Oh, yeah.
Only the most obvious.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, we're still not out of it. This is just the pendulum swinging the other direction.
That's right. You know.
It's got to happen that way, I think, before it gets some kind of a balance.
Good luck. I mean, you know, who's to say that balance won't be the decimation of the species?
Right.
Right? Rather than a feminine golden age.
Oh, that's what equilibrium looks like.
I mean, I would vote. I would vote for the feminine golden age.
Right.
You know, personally speaking. But it could very well be
nothing sustainable.
Hey, once Hillary gets in,
it'll be cool.
It'll be the golden age.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I have some remote viewing.
Warren surprises.
I want to announce them here.
You want to make an announcement?
These aren't mine. I just.
Well, if we're at the announcement part of our program, even if we're not, go ahead, make an announcement. We might have skipped over something.
In 2 years from now, so you can say, Frank told me that.
I say everything that I say to people, I say Frank told me that. I don't want to be held accountable for anything.
Here's his number. I actually have business cards that say contact.
Don't look at me. Frank said it.
There won't be an election in 2016.
Here's his email.
Will not be one.
Will not be one.
Because of martial law?
That's a part of it. The grid is going to go down.
Mm-mm.
The what?
No more hot tea.
The grid is going down.
Gotta get that wood stove.
Mm-hmm. The grid is going down. Does anyone have porch piping?
Yeah. No electricity, no pumps, no.
Sounds like a TV show.
That's a smartphone, too.
And Mad Max, is going to appear in the cities.
Oh, Mad Max is coming in?
Yeah.
Mel?
Well, no, the Mad
and Tina?
The Mad Max.
Are they going to be in costume?
There's no fuel, and you just shoot your way out.
Okay.
People take shit off.
Oh, so you think that's coming as quickly as 2016?
Yep.
Sweet.
That's my prediction.
Well, who said that to you?
Well, some guy who's on the radio in the middle of the night, wake up, and put it on, he's fucking done.
Yeah.
So once again,
well, it must be true. Then.
You're like half asleep. Right. You're a exhausted insomniac, and you're listening to this shit.
It was funny because on the way here, I was like, the emergency broadcast primate system can go fuck itself. It's really on hyper alert.
I know
what its problem is, but
the
really,
emergency primate broadcast system.
Two middle fingers up really? For that program.
I'm a person. Ah. Well,
that's interesting.
I think it's fun to, you know, kind of back in to the, let's just call it the dynamism of something that might be referred to as realization without having to espouse, you know, a teaching or a process or a path or pound anybody's head into, selfing and not selfing and traveling lighter or even the yoga of radiant presence and all of this crap that I've listened to for, you know, 1,000 years and admittedly I'm still, you know, very affectionate and appreciative of, but I like the idea of you've got to be kidding me.
Then you think you figured this out.
You know? Yeah, it's like.
Even you have not figured it out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've got to be kidding me.
Occurring in the moment.
That's right.
Where the hell did you get that?
Yeah. Proof. Yeah. So all you could say all is appearing either randomly, chaotically, according to fate. It doesn't really matter which of those you subscribe to, whether it's the atheistic view, the materialist view, right, the Judeo-Christian view. What difference does it make? What you've adopted as your private Idaho, as your private basis of superstition. Thank you. This doesn't care.
Indifference.
And even if we're interested in hanging out and tickling the enlightenment ivories, right? It's like, well, it doesn't have to look like a teaching. It doesn't have to be a profound insight into the nature of suffering. No, that's part of the fun. It could just be, well, how's this? How's this? And yogically speaking, you know, to take a little more rope that I can hang myself with, right? Take a little more rope. Yogically speaking, I say that as we relax into the, you know, the buffoon I am, right? The buffoon that I am, that the transmutative nature of the IMAX climax becomes more subtly revealed. And therefore one's, say, relationship or vitality with the nature of presence will go through a kind of curious but non-predictable transmutative process as you simply watch the miracle of you show up. It could be that simple. It doesn't have to be a big liturgy. The miracle of you is just, here it is, it's showing up. It's unchartable. And let's say loving 10% of the brain, 90% of the brain, loving, let's say, telekinesis, whatever, you know, teleconference, right? Telephony.
Internet.
Yes. All right. Whatever we love, we may or may not pursue it. Either professionally or casually, we may go to a workshop, we may not, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really even matter how we engage this, maybe with less bravado and less interest, could be advantageous from the vantage point of just, holy shit, this is off the charts. Mm-hmm. This is fucked. Do I love this? I'm not so sure. You know, am I interested in freedom? Well, fuck if I know what that is. Mm. What, is this really, really afflicting? Nah. I mean, would that be bizarre? You know, just to kick back in the midst of your, I mean, ordinary life, the mundanity, if there is such a word, of you, and say, well, is this really afflicting? Nah. Doesn't matter.
That's what I mean. Live long enough.
Yeah. I mean, what, does freedom have to be cathartic or special or for the very few that touch the feet of the very few? I don't think so. So I don't want to make this into anything to create some kind of exhortation that you either feel compelled to agree or even disagree with. Because if I agree with it, it's a lie. If I disagree with it, it's a lie. What the fuck is, what is this? Yeah. What, you know, what? Tell, oh, it's radiant presence, that's what you say. Oh, it's traveling lighter, you know, great, I still love you. But no, it's not. Guess what? Guess what? Your teachings suck. They do. Doesn't mean I don't stop loving them. But really, it's like, how's this?
I've been loving them.
Where's the teaching? Where's the fucking liberation that we think we're craving for? Well, okay, this is good. It's like a whole load off, you know? It's like, whoa, you mean, wow, ho, cool, Because in order for the seeking to go on as an afflictive medium, right? Because seeking is afflictive, right? Seeking is temporal, vectored, right? Full of presumption, dissatisfaction, projection, idealization, right? Constant ideation, the imagination of promoting this present myth into a future condition that's for sure going to look or feel better. This is bullshit. It's such bullshit. That doesn't mean that realization is not so or not possible, that, wow, there is something we could say that might accompany the beatitude of a human having some interest in their own firsthand experience. But we don't have to call it anything. Why not just dumb it the fuck down?
Plant some daffodil bulbs.
Yeah, we're good. go to McDonald's and say, and scream, who makes this horse meat?
Something about that, like, I don't know, there was something the other day, it was like, people just kept saying how, well, yeah, just in the ordinary, I'm like, nothing about this is ordinary.
There's that. That's right. Yeah. If you think, you're living an ordinary day, well, knock yourself out. Good luck with that.
Yeah. See you at the next workshop.
Feel free. Can't be
good. All we have, if there's anything to have and there's not, is the frustrating impropriety of this transient weirdness. Hmm. What happens if self-realization, instead of being a complete relaxation into transient weirdness, is the attempt to try to solidify this and or my relationship with it so that I could be, let's say, unafflicted by thoughts? Well, that would be a dead end. It would be a big dead end because one is creating more of this than there really is. And then wanting to be the surviving enjoyer of, call it, non-afflictive condition. This is all made up. It's all made up. So in that way, maybe one can kick back and say, well, enlightenment, schlenmightenment, or however you might put that, you know? Because it's like, well, this is just some transient horseshit. The objects that appear in your life. Your subjective nature, right? As the, let's say, the luminous end all and be all of experiencing itself. What if that were also just kind of a transient myth?
What is? That's a function of our brains, our neurological construct. There's no proof for it.
Yeah. Well, even brain, there's no proof for brain. Yeah.
Right.
Or neurological construct is going way too far. But still practical if you enjoy it, right? Yeah. If this is acausal, truly, and if what we call, you know, the human biosphere is just a protrusion, an extrusion, a transient afterthought of something that is beyond, right, mm-hmm. measure. Beyond genesis, beyond origin or cause,
right.
Then there's not that much, it's not that, it's less compelling then to make an issue out of brain and or neurological or survival or anything that appears in the human cultural meme. They're like, the brain's not responsible for anything. The brain itself is just the consequence of a profound holography.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, it's really weird that we have this persistent transience. And like some of our friends over the weekend wanted to call it love. I got a little choked up myself. But, you know, but okay. So here is, right, a persistent nagging, not about to let you go. Transience, acausal transience, which doesn't actually, you could say, exist, though something's here. You want to call it love? Fine, we'll call it love. But it's so weirder than, right, anything we could refer to it as. God, love, the absolute. I mean, you know, go Evie, smoke pot and go Rumi on me. You know, okay, thanks. Thanks, Rumi. That was a fun ride. You know, next week I want to do the crystal meth suppository. Who, right? Yeah, great. And then someone becomes an expert on Rumi. You're like, okay, that's cool. You know? I still want the onion rings. What?
And the crystal message.
Yeah, I still want the onion rings. So, the impulse, which is impersonally arising, to make this into something.
Mm-hmm.
just for fun, I would argue is the kernel of all of the hysteria.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Why do animals have that impulse? Why animals seem so untethered by life? They have to find food. And
yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty sure Fred's got snacks or the whole, that's it. It's the whole thing. Snacks, snacks, snacks.
We don't,
my
we
dog.
Can't.
Oh.
We can't really.
He started into snacks.
We can't really know that anything that's appearing in our experience is real or not.
Right.
but I hear you. Animals, whatever they may
be, tend
to be living on a different kind of rhythm.
Yeah.
Right. Different kind of routine.
They don't seem to be self-actualizing. They just are looking to. You know,
we're trying real hard with the monkeys, though. We're trying to get them to be like us.
Yeah, right.
Or dolphins.
Exactly, yeah.
I think the dolphins and the whales are so far beyond, you know, our peculiar way of commenting on things that we're training them how to, you know, do things with red balls, and they're like, Billy, here comes the red ball, motherfuckers.
Boy, they think
the
dolphins are going to get fed today.
The dolphins are like, oh, yeah, here come the people with the red balls. All right. Is there fish? Yeah, there's fish. Go with the red ball thing. There's going to be fish. You know, how do you relate to a creature with, you know, a profoundly developed melon that pushes out organic sonar that can see through anything? What? We're teaching that to play with a red ball?
Well,
you know.
That may be true, what you're saying. Because if they were met, the skeletal record is evidence, if there's evidence, them having them come out of the water.
Right, and said, I'm out of here.
We're mammals.
Right, terrestrial mammals.
Around long enough to go back in the water.
Yeah.
It wasn't an accident they went back in the water.
Interesting. Yeah.
Then they have horizontal tails.
Ah.
The fish have vertical tails.
That's right.
They horizontal tails are legs turned into
reconstituted.
Fish. Yes.
Like mermaids.
Yeah. Is this the same radio show?
Were you high when you were listening to this in the middle of the night?
A different radio show.
I put this together myself.
Yeah. Right
now. No.
What you got?
No. I've just spun that out.
Gorillas.
I spun that out earlier.
Apes, orangutans. Well, how about the monkeys with the butts? Those monkeys with the butts.
Nice butts, yeah. The ones that sit in the hot waters and meditate, right?
Yeah.
The Chinese monkeys.
Yeah, the little red face.
This is good.
This is good.
Has the camera crew come back today? This is fucked, man. This is great. I'm a monkey in a hot pool. Everyone else can just fuck off. Yeah. I mean, you'd say that's what you want to fulfill.
They're the species way longer than we have.
Well, again, you know, the species, you see what happens? You bring up animals and it goes like, it's like cute animal videos forever now.
Yeah.
It seems like almost that we torture ourselves with why and what is this? And, you know, I look out the window and see these squirrels running around going, they're not torturing themselves, wondering what they're doing. They just know that this is what they're supposed to do. And they need to hide from this one and they need to collect food and, you know, to follow.
Well, we are pretty much functioning the same way as anything, including a stalk of corn. And, you know, the capacity for ambient hypnosis is a magical power, which has obviously kind of a price, right? Because, all thinking is metaphor. It's all ambient hypnosis, right? Placing yourself in any condition whatsoever in the midst of an evaporating transience is an ambient hypnosis. Now, the cessation of identification with the ambient hypnosis returns you to presence, returns you to intimacy, but not intimacy with intimacy is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, see? Mm-hmm. So here, this transient strangeness, mm-hmm. which can be so self-befuddling through ambient hypnosis, also reveals itself as intimacy is. Just this. That's the resolution. That's the relief from affliction. Really. So, oh yeah. Before ambient hypnosis kicks into gear, and you know how easily it does kick into gear, and how so wonderfully divergent it is, right? So it's like ambient hypnosis is millions of millions and millions of open doorways and leapfrogging through imagination, right? From moment to moment. None of which is real. It's ambient hypnosis. The reason we suffer is because we appear to be conjured, catapulted, or drawn into ambient hypnosis as a way of life when our actual intelligence is screaming for rest. Maybe that's a plausible suggestion why having a certain conversation could be useful. Because there's nothing to do about ambient hypnosis, right? If you lift a finger to shape your experience, where are you? You remain in, right, ambient hypnosis. You remain in the imagination of a condition. Yes? You remain in the notion that you are gifted with agency.
Well, it's just to see that there is ambient hypnosis. Just knowing that there is, I think, is...
Well, you've always known it, you know, from, I don't know, conception, birth, 2 years old, who cares when the, you know...
We've known it, but we haven't realized it.
This is it. The realization, the recognition, the capacity to articulate the symptoms and materia, mm-hmm. the geometry of ambient hypnosis is, right, part of what we would call the unfolding or maturing process.
It's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, it is, actually. In a sense, it's the most you can do. It'll take it from there. Right? Like, the best you can do within the human cultural meme, which is a hypnotic affair, is discover through the miraculous capacity of self-observation, feeling one's experience. This is what Kashmir Shaivism and Dzogchen and Rigpa and all of these yogis are about. Coming into a sober, intimate encounter with the context and geometry, the texture of present experience. Nice. And as that sobriety deepens, whether through mindfulness practices or who really gives a shit, then we can begin to see the full bandwidth, the full breadth of ambient hypnosis. Mm. And just quite naturally, with no vow required, you'll find yourself backing off from interest in ambient hypnosis. Mm-hmm. You won't get all involved in trying to solve your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, sweet.
That makes sense.
Nice. So like, here,
like
this
playing Mad Libs all day or something. You're like, ooh,
yeah.
Insert a word here.
So you just find yourself joyfully inspired, truly, joyfully, serotonally, if we could bother, inspired to back off from ambient hypnosis and enjoy, why not? Why not enjoy your transmutative nature? Ah, really nice. Yeah, just so it's just whatever this is.
Couldn't that be let it be?
Yeah, that's the, you could say the implication. I mean, I'd like to make as much money as they did by saying it, but yeah. But it's live, you see? You see how it flowers, right? It flowers as a living contact, which is very different than, and I know you didn't intend it that way, like a sticky note on the fridge.
Yeah.
You see, this isn't...
I just want to pop it in my head.
I know. This isn't a thing to do, or it's not an approach. Because the flowering of your emptiness, attentive, nourished emptiness, is real. It's live. It's so. It's irrefutable. And it's not the consequence of something one remembers, right, to do. Yeah, we have to be willing, in a sense, to give up the fight. To even lift a finger to, right, ward off exploitation, right? Not even lift a finger to ward off or medicate, let's call it internalized exploitation. Yeah, because that's just more ambient hypnosis. It's weird, right? We want to fight with this from the vantage point of being a person that longs to be unafflicted. But that's not really what you are. You happen to be transient beatitude beyond measure. So why lift a finger, right? Why duke it out at the level of the human cultural mean when you're like, you know, like you're like you live at Olympus, right? I mean, when you're living on Olympus, what, you don't fuck with them, do you? When you live on Olympus, why fuck with yourself? You know, live on Olympus. Here it is. It's a children's room, but it, you know, I'm Zeus is going to walk in any minute. I got a feeling. Or not. Who needs him?
I think they have a Zeus statue for sale in 611.
Let's go get it.
Yeah. Might be the closest.
the profundity of what this transient beatitude is nourishing, is resolved, though irresolvable. And the micromanagement and the seeking and the explanations, right, and the clever diversions, and of course we're all welcome to it, as whatever clever diversions we feel like. But here, this is some weird shit. I like it. I like being nobody. It suits me. Now, if that turns into some kind of exotic yogic, you know, revelation or scintillation or subtlety or, let's say, being conscious during deep sleep, who gives a fuck? Let it. It's going to do it anyway, right? You're obviously not going to be in charge of how this transient beatitude unfolds in your firsthand experience. Your only job, if you have one at all, is to simply be willing to back off of ambient hypnosis. And the only way for that to occur is to feel it. Feel it again. Feel it again. Get to know yourself as nobody special. Right? Get to know yourself completely under the radar of the drama field of the human cultural meme. Out dream the fuckers. All the celebrity is off the table, right? We don't have a photo booth, no CDs, no DVDs, no pictures with the master. I mean, give me a fucking break. Right?
T-shirts.
Yeah, no T-shirts. Those could be fun.
It sounds like dying without dying.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And what's interesting is that it's, I mean, could we say curiously nonstop?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Permanently dead.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the beauty of you doesn't have a switch. There's no volume control. The beauty of you is persistently on 10.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think a lot of you talk about, like, dying. I think so much of what we do is to avoid dying. And we're, you know, it's just the fear of death.
It's the fear.
It's the fear of death that drives us. You know?
Maybe.
I mean, it's probably the basis of all of our fears. What is the fear of dying?
I don't think so. I think it's more the fear of living.
Mm.
Dying is a myth. To be afraid of a myth seems a little thin. You see?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is a lot, you know, in the human form, most of what we do, the fear comes from, you know, staying alive on an animal level, right?
I don't know. I don't know. It might be fun to look at.
Well, the fear of letting go, I guess, because you're afraid that you'll lose control, is this idea, it's an idea, this conceptualization that you have control.
Right.
You know,
what we refer to as fear, resistance, bracing, in all the ways that it shows up, is far too miraculous to reduce to some tautology. Fear is revelatory. Love is revelatory. Awakening is revelatory. Daydreaming to the grave is revelatory. In this way, we don't isolate anything and then imagine that we can actually come up with the genesis of that so-called thing, right? Once we say fear or this or this or this, and then we offer, right, palliatives or explanations, you're in ambient hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Because fear is radiant miracle. Bracing is radiant miracle. Samsara is radiant miracle. Relaxing in yourself and enjoying a profundity of awareness is radiant miracle.
Mm-hmm.
See, the mind that first objectifies and then goes in search of explanation is a dreaming mind,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah, that could be useful to see. Right. And it's one of the ways that we defer and avoid and relate socially, right? We do. I mean, we daydream together, right? That's what a personality is. It's kind of a, you know, kind of linked daydreaming. We call that the personality.
Yeah.
But what is it like to hang out, you know, on the elevator, instead of all facing forward, facing center, and being willing not to daydream? That's a challenge, right? I mean, we don't do it in our families. Egads, it's too intimate, it's too weird, you know? We don't do it at work unless we're embracing the scheduling system. Right? We're kind of trained to avoid intimacy at all costs. And you realize the kind of intimacy I'm referring to. It's this kind of communication, this kind of shared textural relationship with the weird transient beauty of being alive. You know, it's not about hitting on someone or consummating something, even though, of course, there's 7.3 billion of us, so that appears to be working too.
No, we don't have an issue in that department.
Yeah, we don't have an issue in that department.
Go yeah. on.
Hey, why don't we hook up?
Maybe that is a, yeah. Not to say that there is anything, but a, yeah. you know, an offshoot of our intimacy disorder is that there appears to be an overpopulation issue.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, give me some intimacy, anything.
Creatures replicate, right? Fractals replicate, galaxies replicate, stars replicate. I mean, everything is involved in some kind of mitosis, isn't it? But this intimacy is lovely, to me anyway. I mean, obviously I'm a purveyor of it, right? I show up at a place 4 times a week and play around with the genesis of intimacy. Oh, the luscious thrill of being non-referential. Wow. It's like tingly good. It just is. It's tingly good. Whoa.
And I'm going to hear that all week long, too.
Tingly good.
I'm going to say,
I hate this program, but it feels tingly good.
Really? Welcome to the night sky sun. It's tingly good.
And at least we're not inside the trees again.
Really, I think we should put up a price comparison. Night Sky Sangha and the Yoga of Radiant Presence and Traveling Lighter. See where you can get the most tingle for the buck. And not have to buy a t-shirt. But that's good too. We all have our curious, right? Delightful, strange, Baroque persona. And as, let's say, we become more conversant in the field of tingly good, we're going to hang out in a way that is just curious to our nature, right? If this week or next week you felt like addressing a group of friends and talking this up, then it would have the curious signature of you, right? So, we don't need to have a tagline, though I like tingly good.
I do too.
Yeah, it's nice.
Tingly good.
Are you voting?
I like the effervescence thing too. Mm-hmm.
Such a relief. Not to have to do anything about this. Not to presume that it's about something and that therefore I'm going to get it right. Right? Not to have to iron out all of my kalesas, whatever they're called. Right? My defilements and afflictions, and Lord knows I have more than I can handle. What the fuck? Chill out. If you don't make this about anything, then anything that appears in you, you can see is just pure ambient hypnosis. That's like where the rubber meets the road. This is not about anything. Thank you. And therefore, what effort must you make? Even to tangle with, you know, what appears to you as restlessness or affliction or that you might wish it would feel differently. You see?
Isn't the issue more that you, this compulsion to Tanglewolf. I mean, it's the compulsion. But it's just this unending feeling of needing to engage and wrestle with what is going on.
Yeah.
You know, rather than just sort of standing up.
I'm just dancing.
He's standing by. Standing by to stand
I told
by.
You never to call me here. I'm using my phone for the broadband, so I don't know. I didn't turn off the ringer or something. So, yeah, why not? Look at that. Look at the what we call the effervescence, call it compulsion or impulse to turn this into something so that you can play with it. It's kind of a cat and mouse thing, right? Yeah, that's cool. Not really a problem. To remain, you know, doggedly engaged in it, right? Defensively, doggedly engaged in it, or spend an inordinate amount of time trying to remedy it, or identify yourself with it, right? Is ambient hypnosis. Why this confuses itself with such abandon, I don't know. I don't know why this confuses itself with such abandon. I really don't. I don't know if anyone, you know, I don't think the Buddha had, you know, a good one for that. He referred to all kinds of curious questions as imponderables. And he suggested to his minions, it's like, don't say Voldemort. It's like a Harry Potter thing. He who should not be uttered, right? The Buddha had this thing with these imponderables that said, they will drive you to the brink of insanity, right? So that meant what? We shouldn't ask the question? And that's, you know, that's the first thing you ask. Like, yeah, show me the quickest way to the brink of insanity. I'm in. I'm all in.
Yeah, what are we interested? What's the investment?
You can feel, right, what engagement feels like. You can feel, if we've all done our job, right, not just me, but if we've all done our job, then you can feel what... the absolute release from engagement feels like. You make the call. And it's an organic thing, right? When has your will ever worked? How about never? So why imagine that it should work when it comes to feeling yourself as transient beatitude? Your will's not going to work. Nothing obeys nobody here in this observable universe. No one obeys anyone. So there's no need for, you know, will. Will is myth. Time is myth. The notion of being a corporeally incarcerated sufferer of affliction is myth. But you could say it takes some grease, right? Some enzyme, maybe a kick in the pants from time to time to tackle the myth, to find a way out of the Minotaur's lair of ambient hypnosis.
Just to see that it's a myth and to be okay with it.
Yeah.
Let it mythologize.
That's right. Let it mythologize. That's right. Yeah. And then you could say the potency, the caloric potency of attraction and awareness and identification that gets involved in, right, the hypothesizing, the mythology, just starts to slowly back off. you actually withdraw vital nourishment from the mythology as you rest in your transient, useless nature.
And the mythology wanes.
It just evaporates. It just does. And you can see how thin the veneer of the mythology is as you discover your, what do you say, starve a cold, feed a fever. Starve the mythology by resting, in a manner of speaking, in your transient beatitude.
Well, you know, in a way, I mean, I have to bring this up because this is a whole...
That's okay. We'll dump it. We'll shred it. Yeah, what do you got?
I was just thinking that there's so many things that came up that you said that had, you know, makes me think that Jesus got it right.
Yeah.
And you know, the poor guy didn't want to be worshipped, didn't want to be called God, as far as I can see.
Probably not.
But the whole thing about, you know, he called it God's will, but when you say that our will never really gets us anywhere, what he was really saying is relinquish the will.
Yeah.
Let go of it.
Right.
So he called it God's will.
Okay.
But so many things, I think that he must have realized the nature of what this is.
One would suggest that, you know.
From what I know about him.
Yeah.
There's only stories.
One would suggest that, you know, Jesus had stumbled into a yogic revelation, mm-hmm. you know, that transcended his Judaic education mm-hmm. and certainly predated, right? Christianity, as it's known and practiced today. Mm-hmm. So
where it went all wrong.
Where it turned into the Crusades and has never abated.
What practicing?
What?
Yeah, good question. Who knows?
What'd you say?
What cracked his egg?
What cracked his egg?
Yeah.
I just wonder who Zeg was. What cracked Zeg? Okay.
Well, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, this did. This always does. Right?
But yeah, I don't know when it happened.
Well, the lost gospel of Jesus suggests, poetically, like a late night radio show, that he spent in the East.
Right.
Oh.
That he was cavorting with, you know, yogis that sit under banyan trees. And if that's true, and it doesn't have to be true, metaphorically or otherwise, he was subjected to a culture that knew the way of the depth of realization. But it also could have happened, you know, in the olive grove herding sheep. What the hell? Right?
I have no reportage on that.
No idea.
Just when they start talking.
Yeah. Right.
What I find interesting is the personification or the personalization of it with my father this and my father that. And
yeah, you don't know if that was being uttered by him or in what vernacular or how that wove its way in.
But it just seemed like it was a patriarchal type of thing.
Well, it certainly could have been justified by the cultural milieu.
Maybe
right?
Just to put it across to be understood.
Where's the triumvirate come from? Father, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. That's not coming out of the East.
Yes.
Well, it's Shiva Shakti.
Yes.
It's all the same thing in different.
Well, it depends whether, you know, the models that you can find, you know, are like the two model, right? Yin Yang is a two model, right? Mm-hmm. Shiva Shakti is a two model.
Isn't there another? I thought there was.
There's many. And then.
Shiva Shakti one that had three. Yeah.
Well, then you go into the three model, right? Like the Dzogchen, the Dharmakaya, the Nirmana Kaya, the Sambhogakaya, right? It's three.
Okay.
Father, Son, Holy Ghost, the Spirit.
There's a million of them. If you look up triad
the,
and like religion,
the
you're
suffering,
like, ah!
the impermanent, the impermanence and...
Well, then the Buddhist thing, you know, the three characteristics, right?
Yeah.
Anicca, anatta,
right.
And
okay, that's
dukkha.
Kind of confusing.
Right, that's a three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the message is pretty much let it go. The Beatles didn't have it right all along.
Well, no.
No.
You see, because the message was really fuck you, fuck me, and fuck this.
That's the original three.
That's the other triumph.
But,
it's
you know,
just in the translation.
I can't imagine going to a cathedral and hearing, you know, the bishop espouse that. Brethren, fuck you, fuck me, and fuck this. Yeah. So, see, there's so nothing to do that don't even bother letting go. You know, that's too much. If there's something like realization, you could say the cessation of agency completely trumps any suggestion, any remedy. Yes? That's the revelation.
Mm-hmm.
The revelation is this transient weirdness impersonally arises. It never escapes from itself, but it appears right at a level of permutation which is more or less intolerable. It does not actually convey agency or space or time. There's nothing here to let go of, nor anyone that could possibly let go of anything.
Nobody here to do that.
And so revelation, you see, is different than a message given about what you might want to think of doing. Right? And so we don't need the Course in Miracles. We don't need love. So there's nothing wrong with it necessarily. We don't really need it because it's too small a meme anyway.
Mm.
Love's cool. Love rocks. Compassion's cool. Compassion rocks. But this will really kick your ass. Yeah. I don't know if that's a message. I hope not. I don't want to have a message. That would be fucked up.
You have it the way to avoid it.
I know.
And yet you keep taping.
Well, it's an entertainment vehicle. You want to give your adoring public of one or two people something to do. That was a fun experiment. Say goodbye.